Hey, this is Leo for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about how your mind distorts reality, and I'm going to tell you how to start developing accurate perception. I want to start off by reading you a powerful quote. Quote, "The strength of man's position in the world depends on the degree of adequacy of his perception of reality. The less adequate it is, the more disoriented and hence insecure he is, and hence he is in need of idols to lean on and thus find security. The more adequate it is, the more he can stand on his own feet and have his center within himself." End quote. That's from psychologist Eric Frome. This is a very foundational episode. I'm going to introduce you to a very important distinction that's going to serve you throughout the rest of your self-actualization journey. And it's going to be very eye-opening for you if you stick with me. It's really worth it to stick with me on this one. The distinction that I'm going to introduce to you here is one that actually comes to us from Abraham Maslow, who is sort of the father of self-actualization. He coined the concept. And the distinction is this: deficiency cognition versus being cognition. We can also label it as deficiency perception versus being perception. So we're going to be using the words cognition and perception interchangeably throughout this talk. So there's two kinds: the deficiency kind and the being kind. Now, I'm going to go into some length and give you a lot of examples and a lot of nuanced compare and contrasting between these two so you get a real good idea. But a shorthand way to talk about them is decognition versus B cognition, right? D for deficiency, B for being. Or D perception versus B perception. So that's just technical jargon that if you hear me using, you understand what I mean. So this concept comes to us from Abraham Maslow. The question is, though, it's kind of nerdy sounding. Why is it important? How can we actually apply this in our own lives? Actually, it's very important because this is one of the hallmark characteristics of a self-actualized human being. One of the things that I want to do more of is I want to introduce you and explain the concept of self-actualization in more subtler shades and nuances. Because if I just take, let's say, the average person on the street and ask him, what is self-actualization? He'll give me a blank look. He'll have no idea. Now, if I take someone who's been watching my videos for the last 2 years and I ask him, what is self-actualization? It's still going to be a problem, because what you're going to do is you're going to tell me something like, well, self-actualization is some sort of like synonym for self-improvement. It's basically self-improvement, becoming the best version of myself, yada, 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 something like that, right? But this is a very, a very simplistic, kind of like the most basic definition of self-actualization that you can have. Self-actualization for Abraham Maslow and for myself, when I say self-actualization, to me, it means a laundry list of about 20 things, very specific, concrete attributes of a human being that a self-actualized person has, which contrast to the ordinary human being who doesn't have these attributes. It's ways of looking at the world and interacting with the world, and ways of being and ways of using your mind. So the problem, though, is that, you know, self-actualization is this very abstract, high-level concept. And that can be very useful, but also it can be very limiting, because most people can't wrap their mind around it because they don't really know what the full definition of the word means. And to them, it's just like an empty label. So to address that issue, we're going to address it in multiple episodes, but we're going to tackle it here in this episode by talking about one very important feature of self-actualized people. And it is that they have being cognition or being perception, as opposed to deficiency cognition or deficiency perception. I'm going to be telling you a lot of quotes from Maslow and some other amazing writers in this episode, so stay with me, because these are very powerful, very insightful quotes. So here is how Abraham Maslow describes it very beautifully. He says, quote, "A self-actualizing person is more able to perceive the world as if it were independent not only of him, but also of human beings in general. He can then more readily look upon nature as if it were there in itself and for itself, and not simply as if it were a human playground put there for human purposes. He can more easily refrain from projecting human purposes onto it. And in a word, he can see it is there in its own being rather than as something to be used or something to be afraid of or something to be reacted to in some other human way. A section of cancer seen through a microscope, if only we can forget that it is a cancer, can be seen as a beautiful and intricate and awe-inspiring organization. A mosquito is a wondrous object if seen as an end in itself." End quote. So what is being cognition or being perception? It's the ability to look at things holistically as they actually are, in a very attentive way, without judging or classifying these things. It's an ego-less, self-agendaless form of perception. In Maslow's words, it's unmotivated, it's impersonal, it's desireless, it's unselfish, it's not needing, and it's detached. So this is your ability to perceive an object for itself and not the way that it is for you. For itself meaning that your desires and fears and emotions and your self-agenda doesn't infect and get projected onto the object itself. Now, this object could be a physical object like a tree or a car or a coffee table, or it could be a living object. It could be an animal. It could be a human being. It could also be an institution like government or the Republican Party or the Church of Latter-day Saints or Mormons or a race of people, African Americans or Asians or whites or whatever. So you can start to see the potential ramifications of this, right? Because how you perceive an object is very important because it dictates how you then react to that object. Now, if you perceive an object as it is for itself, you kind of get the most accurate representation of it as you can get. If you perceive an object as it is for you, what you get is you get a tainted perception. You get a perception which has got baked into it your own issues in life, whatever they happen to be. And you can have all sorts of different issues in life, or other people could have all sorts of different issues in life. And in fact, what could happen if you're not the one doing it, you could be on the receiving end of this. So other people could perceive you not as you are for yourself, but as you are to them. Does that ring some bells? Has that ever happened to you? People don't take your words or your presentation or your message or your work just as it is. They project their own issues onto it and onto you. And when that happens to you, that usually is not something that you like. You think it's unfair, and you think it's inaccurate, and you think it creates problems. Well, likewise when you do it. So being cognition is the ability to avoid this kind of projection that the human mind tends to do. You could say it's the most accurate form of perception that's possible for a human being. It's a passive and a receptive form of perception in the sense that you don't add a lot of stuff to it. And it's also a benevolent form of perception, which is something that Maslow's going to explain as I read one of his quotes. Let me read some more from Maslow because he's got some brilliant descriptions of all this stuff. He says, quote, "Self-actualizing people take a non-valuing, non-judging, non-interfering, non-condemning attitude towards others. a desirelessness and a choiceless awareness. This understanding permits much clearer and more insightful perception and understanding of what is actually there. End quote. He also says, quote, concrete perceiving of the whole of the object implies also that it is seen with care. The caring minuteness with which a mother will gaze upon her infant again and again, or the lover at his beloved, or the connoisseur at his paintings, this will surely produce a more complete perception than the usual casual rubricizing which passes for perception illegitimately. End quote. So you're starting to see this difference? It's the difference between really looking at something and seeing it as it is versus what we normally call perception, which is this kind of rubricizing, putting the perception into a conceptual framework. So let's now contrast and compare this being cognition with deficiency cognition, decognition. What is this? Well, this is ordinary perception. When ordinary people talk about perception, we like to say that it's just like, oh, it's just, you know, it's perception. It's the fact. It's how reality is. When I perceive something, when I see a tree or a car or a person or a government organization, I'm looking at it objectively. I'm seeing the facts. That's how we tend to present it to ourselves. But is that really what's happening? What Maslow would suggest is that this is actually a partial and incomplete form of experience. It's an anxiety-based and a deficiency-motivated way of perceiving the world, because it's driven by the ego and by your self-agenda. So the degree to which you have deficiencies, the degree to which you need security or safety or emotional comfort or money or whatever your ego happens to need in life, that's the degree to which you're going to evaluate the things you look at to see if they're going to give that to you or if they're not. See, your mind is very brilliant at automatically and unconsciously for you filtering out what's relevant and what's not relevant. So if we're not careful, and if we're just going about perceiving the world in a deficiency-motivated way, what will happen is that we're going to look at the world and we're going to perceive all sorts of things happening in the world that aren't really there, but we perceive them that they're there because of what these things mean for me, for my ego and my self-agenda. Does this thing make me happy, or does it make me sad? Does it make me angry, or does it make me calm? Is this good for me or bad for me? How is this for my family? How is this for my business? How much money is this thing going to make me? Is it pretty? Is it beautiful? Or is it ugly? All these judgments and evaluations that we project. This is a more active form of perception than being perception. Because with being perception, all you got to do is you got to sit back and let in whatever's there. With deficiency cognition, though, what you're doing is you're actively manipulating the perception. But this happens so automatically by your mind that you don't really notice that it's happening. This de-perception, this deficiency perception, is also anthropocentric. An anthropocentric form of perception. What this means is that it's a way of looking at the world from the human species perspective. Like Maslow said, as though the world was a playground and a tool for human beings. This, of course, is not the case, but we often forget this. We tend to look at everything as though it's made for human beings. What can human beings do with it? Does it serve humanity? And if it doesn't, well, then we either ignore it or we destroy it or we discount it in some way. This is very commonly seen in science, where supposedly the scientists are supposed to be very objective thinkers, and yet they take a very anthropocentric view on reality. Deficiency perception also tends to be rigidly rational, overly rational, hyper left brain thinking, because it tends to be very abstract. To be very good at deficiency cognition, what you need to do is you need to abstract from the facts that are there to whatever concepts and models you want about reality. So what you're doing is you're abstracting from the concrete, from the facts, you're abstracting some kind of inference or theory or a model or some sort of little handy mnemonic or a tool with which to manipulate these concrete facts. But that's very different than the concrete facts themselves. But see, what happens a lot of times is that we abstract, but then we forget, and we tell ourselves, oh, no, we never abstracted in the first place. We tell ourselves that our abstractions are perceptions, when in fact that's not the case. Also, with deficiency perception, what tends to happen is that the person is not really able to hold paradox very well. That's that rigid rationalism, which demands things to fit into a certain conceptual framework and into our rubrics of how reality ought to be. Also, this kind of cognition, decognition, tends to be dogmatic and ideological. Very interesting. Let me read you some more from Maslow on this point. He says, quote, "In ordinary cognition, the object is seen not so much per se, but as a member of a class, as an instance in a larger category. This kind of perception I have described as, quote, rubricizing." And again, would have to point out that this is not so much a full perception of all aspects of the object or the person being perceived as it is a kind of taxonomy, a classifying, a ticketing off, and a putting away into one file cabinet or another. To a far greater degree than we ordinarily realize, cognition involves also placing on a continuum. It involves a kind of automatic comparing or judging or evaluating. It implies a higher than, a less than, a better than, a taller than, etc. End quote. He also goes on to say, quote, "It is as if less developed people live in an Aristotelian world in which classes and concepts have sharp boundaries and are mutually exclusive and incompatible. For example, male-female, selfish-unselfish, adult-child, kind-cruel, good-bad. A is A, and everything else is not A. That's how it is in Aristotelian logic. And never the twain shall meet. But seen by a self-actualizing person, this in fact is not that A and not A interpenetrate. Sorry. It's a fact that A and not A interpenetrate and are one. That any person is simultaneously good and bad, male and female, adult and child." End quote. He also goes on to say, quote, "Abstractions, to the extent that they are useful, are also false. In a word, to perceive an object abstractly means not to perceive some aspects of it. It clearly implies selection of some attributes, rejection of other attributes, and creation or distortion of still others, so that we create it, we manufacture it." He also says, quote, "Let us take, for example, the perception of a painting or a person. In order to perceive them fully, we must fight our tendency to classify, to compare, to evaluate, to need, and to use. The moment that we say this man is, for example, a foreigner, in that moment we have classified him and performed an abstracting act, and to some extent cut ourselves off from the possibility of seeing him as a unique and whole human being. End quote. And he also says, quote, fully disinterested, desireless, objective and holistic perception of another human being becomes possible only when nothing is needed from him. End quote. And finally, he says, quote, my studies of self-actualizing people have found in them simultaneously the ability to abstract without giving up concreteness and the ability to be concrete without giving up abstractness. End quote. So the key insight that I want you to get from this talk is that your own egoic deficiencies warp your perceptions. Try to realize just how significant this is, what I'm telling you. Do you understand what I'm actually telling you? Are you hearing me? I'm saying that your own egoic deficiencies, your own neuroses, warp your perception of reality. What I'm telling you is that the very interface between you and reality is compromised by your lack of mental health. And that the accuracy of your perceptions depend on your emotional maturity and your mental health. And that this distortion that's created, this is not a small distortion. This is not something we can just say, oh yeah, Leo, I know there's a little bit of distortion between what my ego wants and my self agenda and between what I actually see. No, what I'm saying is that it's a highly significant distortion. It's not a small distortion we can sweep under the rug and say everything's okay. It's a massive distortion, which leads to many of the issues you have in your life. So this is not just, you know, a philosophical consideration. This is not a theoretical consideration. This is a very practical consideration. This explains many of the issues and recurring dysfunctional patterns that happen in your life that you just can't eliminate and can't stop, and you don't know why you can't. Well, you know why? Because your perception is so inaccurate of reality that you can't even see that the problems you have in your life are being created by your perceptions. And so what happens is that you go out there in the real world and you try to change things in your life. You try to get a new job. You try to change your girlfriend, or you try to change your husband. You try to change your kids. You try to change the city you live in, the country you live in. You try to change how much money you have in your bank account. You try to go to the gym and change how you look. You change how you talk. You change how you dress. You change all this stuff. And yet all the problems basically still remain for you. That's because the problems are largely a function of your flawed perception, of your deficiency cognition, and your inability to have being cognition. So if you want to really self-actualize, you need to start to see the importance of this and to start developing being cognition. You need to start to notice, not just to hear from me intellectually and just to believe me, but you need to actually experientially start to notice how your mind warps reality and how it rubricizes reality. By rubricizing reality, this is Maslow's word, what we mean is we just mean that your mind creates kind of a conceptual rubric or framework, and then it tries to get reality to match your concepts of reality, rather than just seeing what's there in reality without any kind of rubric or judgments or evaluations or stipulations of your own. It really is sobering to come to a point in your own psychological development where you look around you and you realize, like, you really grasp that you live in an augmented reality. Augmented reality is not some technological fantasy of the future where computers and virtual reality goggles will project onto ordinary reality some kind of computer images. Augmented reality is already here. It's what the human mind is a genius at doing. This is what makes the human race such a powerful and also destructive force on this planet, is that we are probably the only organism on this planet that lives in an augmented reality. Augmented by our concepts and our images and our fantasies and our desires. Augmented in such a way where we don't realize that this augmentation is happening. And yet at the same time, our minds tell us that we are the only self-aware creatures on this planet. And the mind, it plays this little trick. It says, no, but Leo, what are you talking about? Human beings are the most self-aware creatures. We know ourselves. We're awake, so to speak. It's all the dumb animals that don't really know what they're doing. Human beings, we know what we're doing. But the more you grow psychologically, the more you discover just how big of a sham this narrative is. Society tends to feed that narrative to us. Even science tends to feed into this narrative that, like, human beings that are at the, you know, the intellectual top of the food chain and the intelligence chain on this planet. And while, you know, human beings unquestionably have some remarkable mental abilities, the problem is that we don't acknowledge that the ego creates a kind of smog through which we can't clearly see reality. I love this concept, ego smog, from David Bohm. Beautiful concept. David Bohm is a quantum physicist. Well, he was. He's no longer alive, but he's a really brilliant thinker and a very great example of a scientist who's both rational, but also post-rational and highly intuitive and was very, very attuned to this problem that I'm speaking about here. He was one of the scientists, one of the few scientists who really got it, who really saw the limits of the human mind and how it creates this ego smog, which distorts your ability to see and to think. And then from which all most of your human problems stem. In fact, what I want to do is I want to quote David Bohm here because he has a very insightful ways of wording this. He says, quote, thought is always doing a great deal, but it tends to say that it hasn't done anything, that it is just telling you the way things are. But thought affects everything. What thought takes to be perception, what we ordinarily call perception, is actually highly affected by thought. Thought can produce experiences without our being aware that they are being produced by thought. It is this deceptive feature of thought that we have to watch out for. This is the point I'm trying to make. Thought is affecting what you see in many subtle ways. You may miss the fact that this is coming from thought itself. What is really missing is that we have to be able to see that thought is actually participating in perception. We are infusing our imagination, our past, and our knowledge into what we see. And eventually it muddles up the brain. From that going wrong, it spreads and becomes a systemic fault that spreads into everything. End quote. That's all various excerpts from the physicist David Bohm. So what do we do about all this? It seems like a pretty deep systemic problem. And it is. We're only scratching the surface of how deep and how systemic this problem is. This problem is like a bug, you might say, in the mind's operating system. The mind is blind to the mind's own biases. And this plays out in your life very practically. It creates a lot of your practical problems in life, relationships, business, financial problems, emotional problems, inability to be satisfied and fulfilled with life, depression, stress, anxiety, nervousness, all the many neuroses that you have, they all ultimately stem from this. But also it creates a lot of problems collectively for society. War, genocide, governments abusing their citizens, famines, religious intolerance, and so forth, all of these problems are also ultimately stemming from this problem, this systemic fault in the way that the human mind works. This is a deep study. There's a lot we could say about this, but I don't have that much time. Maybe I'll cover it more in the future, in other episodes, because I really want to talk about the social problems of all this, because it really goes way beyond just your own personal development. So what's required here is practice. We need you to get awareness over the fact that this is happening on a daily basis in your life, and that you're living your life from deficiency perception. You're perceiving life from your own deficiencies. But this is hard to just believe, and it doesn't help you to just believe me. You have to actually see it for yourself. You have to develop awareness for your own projections, how you project your own agenda and your own rubric onto reality, onto people, onto things, onto situations in your life, onto your business, onto your spouse, onto your children. This happens every day for you, see? To turn this around, what needs to happen is you need to start looking at objects and people for themselves as they actually are and not how they are for you. And to do that, let me point out some important things for you. The following list of things are all projections of your mind which do not actually exist in the external world and which are not a feature of reality itself. Firstly, labels and names that we give to objects. These are all projections. Also, every category, taxonomy, and hierarchy that we impose upon reality is artificially constructed by the human mind. It's a projection. It doesn't actually exist in reality. Even more importantly, meanings, judgments, values, usefulness, and purpose are all projections of your mind onto reality. So whenever you look at a situation or an object or a person and you get a meaning from that, or you judge that, or you put a valuation on it, like you say, well, that's valuable or that's not valuable, or you say that's useful to me or that's not useful to me, or you say that has a purpose or that has no purpose, all of that activity is a projection of your mind and a part of deficiency cognition. Are you taking this in? Are you seeing the severity and the magnitude of what I'm talking about here? This is so pervasive. The tentacles of this issue go into every facet of your life. This thing is like a cancer. Deficiency perception is like a cancer. And it's like a cancer that's at a very, you know, advanced stage where it's starting to infect every organ and every tissue in your body. It's not just localized into one little area. Think about how many meanings you assign to situations and people and objects in life. How many judgments you make, how many valuations you create, how many things you evaluate based on its usefulness to you or not. Can you stomach the fact that all that stuff is a mental abstraction, a projection of your mind, and that these things don't actually exist in the real world? I'm talking about some heavy stuff here. That means like when your parents get cancer and one of them dies, whatever meaning you assign to their death, that's a mental projection of your mind. Or when your child gets sick and you're worried about your child because you really fear for their health or something like that, or for their future. Your child, let's say, gets into some, you know, dangerous situation. Again, that's a projection of your mind. Or when you're dating somebody and you're trying to find, you know, that dream girlfriend or dream boyfriend or spouse that you want to marry, and whatever feelings you have about this person, whether positive or negative, whatever evaluations you make of them, however you see them fitting into your life, that all of these things are actually not that person. They're all creations of your mind. They're part of the ego fog or the ego smog, as David Bohm explained it. Also, emotional triggers. So this one's really important to watch out for. And this one's very practical for you, because any time that you get emotionally triggered by a situation, whether it's someone yelling at you, or someone calling you a bad name, or someone even doing you harm, or someone stealing some money from you, or someone breaking your heart, rejecting you, annoying you, frustrating you, taking advantage of you, abusing you, physically or emotionally. The emotional triggers you have from that are also all creations of your mind. That's huge. Can you see how huge that is? Those triggers are not in the situation or in the object. They're completely in your mind. Also, and this one's really huge, see if you can follow me on this one. It's very advanced insight. Relationships between objects do not actually exist. Every relationship between one object and another object is a projection of the human mind. In reality, everything in the universe is infinitely related to every other thing in the universe. The relationships are infinite. The only question is, which relationships does your mind focus on? You see? You can actually try this out as an exercise. Sit down in a room by yourself and just look at any object and notice its relationship to you. And then notice that that's actually one out of an infinite number of billions and trillions of relationships that that exact object has with everything else in the universe. And yet your mind defocuses all of those and just focuses on this one. Your relationship, let's say, to the lamp. Or your relationship to your spouse. But the reality is that your spouse is related to you as much as she or he is to the moon, to the sun, to the president of the United States, to the person you hate next door, like your neighbor, to, you know, whatever's going on Pluto. Who's actually picking out the relationship? Who actually establishes that a relationship even exists? The human mind. It projects it. It projects it as a function of self-survival. It's part of your ego agenda. For whatever reason, it's helpful for you to perceive this one relationship here. And then, not only do you perceive a relationship, but then, of course, you add so much more to it. You know, what is the relationship? How do you feel towards this person? You know, is this person nice to you? Do they owe you? Do you owe them? Is there guilt going on? Is there shame? Is there embarrassment? You know, all this stuff. We get so emotionally tied up with relationships. And I don't just mean with people, I also mean with objects. What's your relationship to your car? You do have a relationship to your car, if you're like most people. Because, you know, if you walked out tomorrow and you saw that a tree had fallen on your car and crushed it in half, you would have an emotional reaction. You wouldn't just stand there and be like, oh, my car just got destroyed by that tree. That's not how you would actually react. You would be like, holy shit. And you actually probably feel sad for your car, or you'd feel pissed off that a piece of property that's yours, another relationship is that you own that piece of property, another fiction of your mind. But see, that relationship is there as well. So this whole web of relationships comes into your mind. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're upset by this. Your car has been destroyed. And now you're reacting emotionally to all this. And you really feel like you lost some value. That was a $30,000 car. It was brand new. I just bought it. I brought it home from the dealership last week. And now it's destroyed. And my insurance company, you know, what are they going to do? They're probably bastards. They're not going to pay me what it's worth. Another relationship you have is your relationship to your insurance company. And what do you feel about your insurance company? How do you evaluate them? What kind of judgments do you make about them? What kind of meanings do you assign to that? Do you see how these tentacles reach very far in your life? That's in some ways what makes them so difficult to track, is because they just, it's like a web, right? It just, it's like a chain, and it goes many, many, many levels deep, and it's all nested in itself. Which makes it very hard to untangle this giant mess in your mind. Which is why when you have some kind of psychological problem in your life, like let's say you're depressed or you have low self-esteem, you don't like how you look, you're not confident with women or with men, or you're insecure with business, or you're insecure about your money situation, all these things, you think that this is just like a little individual isolated problem, but actually it's not. It's a consequence of this web, this giant web of relationships and beliefs and judgments that you project onto reality. It's really a defect or a bug within the mental software that you've been spinning in your mind. You see? But it doesn't feel that way because it takes so much work to become conscious of this. It takes years of work to become conscious of this. And lastly, the thing that doesn't exist is separations and boundaries. Objects themselves are creations of the mind. This thing goes so deep that even you're looking at a car and calling it a car and thinking of it as a physical object, a car with four wheels and it's colored red or whatever, that itself is a separation or a mental boundary that your mind carves out of a completely unified phenomenal field which has no objects in it. Reality does not have any objects. If you look upon reality ever in your life with complete lucidity, and this is possible, with complete lucidity and being cognition, you will see that there is not a single boundary or object in reality. But that's going to take some work. Take a lot of work to see that. That's not something you can get to just from hearing me talk about this stuff. The most important thing you got to understand here is that everything I'm talking about is just mental noise to you. Even if you like it and you agree with it and you believe it and it sounds, oh, very eye-opening, it makes no difference because it's just another piece of knowledge in your knowledge graph, in your web of beliefs. What really makes the difference is when you actually are able to change how you perceive. And just getting another thought into your mind does not change how you perceive. So how do you change how you perceive? Well, in practice, the situation is pretty bleak. It's very difficult to grasp what I'm telling you experientially, and most people will not grasp it, which is actually from the problem and the place from which virtually all of social problems stem. The reason we have all these social problems, social inequality, wars and terrorism, all these things, is because it's just so freaking hard to grasp what I'm telling you experientially. If everyone on Earth was able to grasp it, all these problems would mostly be solved instantly. But nevertheless, you as an individual can do it if you really see the importance of it and you're willing to allocate the time and energy that this topic deserves, not just a casual, you know, listening to me talk for an hour. That's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket. This requires practice. And if you're not willing to practice, it's not going to happen for you. What's going to happen is you're just going to listen to me, you're going to forget all this, you're going to fall back asleep next week, and you're just going to go on with deficiency perception, perceiving reality through the egoic smog that you have and all the agenda that you have, and not as reality actually is. If you ever gaze upon reality as it actually is, you'll discover that there are no problems in reality. Every problem is a fabrication of your mind. Think about the most deepest problem you have that just bugs the hell out of you, that you think is just completely insurmountable. You have one of those? Most of us do. Whatever that is, pick one for yourself right now. And now try to imagine that that thing is a complete fabrication of your mind and doesn't exist at all. You created it. But Leo, how could that be? That's not possible. Not with my problem, Leo. You don't understand. My problem's a real problem. Like, I got a real, Leo, I got a real serious problem. Like, my child is a drug addict. How can you tell me that that's a projection of my mind? That's a real problem. it's tough to convince someone who's so unconsciously absorbed in their deficiency perception of reality that it's even possible to perceive reality from a position of being perception. And this is exactly what differentiates an ordinary human being from a self-actualizing human being. Is that the self-actualizing human being, maybe not always, maybe not fully, not 100% of the time, but at least to a significant degree, is able to look upon reality from outside themselves in an objective fashion, outside of the smog of their ego. So how do we actually practice this? Let's say you're really committed and you're saying, like, Leo, okay, you've convinced me. I really want to change something here. How do I change my perception? How do I get this self-actualized form of perception? Well, here's a little exercise for you that you can start to use to do this. It's real simple. Select an object or a person that you either hate or you love, and then see it for itself as it actually is and not how it is for you. See it independent of its value or its meaning or its purpose or its usefulness to you or to humanity. Look at the object as though God up in the clouds was looking at the object. Totally dispassionate, in other words. But not in a sort of like left brain, highly analytical way. Because that can be a trap too. A lot of times, scientists or rational people will convince themselves, like, well, Leo, I'm already doing this. You don't understand. You know, I'm a very rationally minded, scientifically minded person. You know, truth is something that I'm a champion of. And so therefore, you know, I already am doing what you're saying. I already am perceiving from a being cognition perspective. No, you're not. Not at all. In fact, your rationalism is a very big example of deficiency cognition. It's not a complete perception because your rationalism includes all the mental categories, concepts, knowledge, frameworks in which you place the object. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something very different, something you probably haven't ever done in your entire life. Maybe you did it when you were a child, before mainstream society filled your mind with modern-day rational ways of thinking. That's what we're taught, right? We're not really taught religion nowadays. We're taught rationalism. That is the new religion, rationalism. But it's even more dangerous than old religion, because old religion, you could tell it was bullshit, and you could tell that it was, like, it was religion. And you could see that it contrasts to practical everyday logic. But with modern scientific rationalism, you can't see that anymore. So you pick an object that you hate or that you love, and you try to sit there and look at it in the present moment, not even as an object. Because even calling it an object is already you rubricizing it. This takes some work. When you first try it, it's going to seem weird. It's going to seem like, what the hell am I doing? You might be sitting there looking at a lamp for 30 minutes, trying to see the lamp as it is for itself and not how it is for you. The fact that you see it as a lamp is how it is for you, not for itself. For itself, it's not a lamp. For itself, it doesn't have any function. For itself, its purpose is not to light the room. For itself, it's not even an object. It's not big, it's not small, it's not tall, it's not short, it's not beautiful, it's not ugly, it's not old, it's not new, it's not worth $10 or $100 or $1,000 or however much you paid for it. It's none of those things. What is it actually? So your job is to sit there and just to look at it until you can get to the point where you can be with it completely from a position of being cognition. And then contrast and compare that experience with the everyday experience you have of a lamp, which is deficiency cognition. So one thing I don't want you to do is, I don't want you to trick yourself here into thinking like, well, Leo, I already do being cognition all the time. No, you don't. All your ordinary perception that you have, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep nowadays, unless you've done years or decades of meditation work or enlightenment work, is all deficiency cognition. So don't fool yourself thinking that you're somehow immune or exempt or above what I'm talking about here. You're not above it at all. In fact, let's do this little experiment right now. As you're watching me, or if you're listening to me on audio, from right now until the end of this episode, which will be another 5 or 10 minutes, I want you to practice this. Perceive me for myself, not for yourself. Perceive me without any evaluations about whether I'm good for you or bad for you, whether I'm right or wrong, whether I'm beautiful or I'm ugly, whether what I'm saying makes sense or it doesn't, whether it's logical or it's illogical, whether I'm Leo or not Leo, or whether even I'm a human being, or I'm a mammal, or I'm a physical object, however you classify me. Throw all those away for a minute. And just try to stay conscious for the next 5 minutes, let's say, of what you're getting from me, the actual perception of me, minus your ego smog, minus all your rubrics, whether positive or negative. Try that right now. And try to stay conscious. And I want you to notice if you forget as I'm talking and you fall back asleep. So a couple more points I want to make here. One is the connection of all this being cognition to enlightenment and mindfulness. So the connection is very direct. Enlightenment basically is the dissolution of your ego, so it is the removal of the ego smog. If you're wondering why I keep talking about enlightenment so much, now you can start to see. Because it removes the ego smog, which allows you to perceive reality in the most accurate way that's humanly possible. Sounds rather important now, doesn't it? Same thing for meditation. Same thing for mindfulness work. I talk a lot about these topics, and I'll be talking more and more about these topics in greater and greater depth in the future. And I want you to stay with me on these topics, because these topics are the ones that will transform the quality of your life the most. If you are just open-minded enough to it, and also if you take action on it, and don't just take it all as theory and beliefs. So there's a very direct connection between all this and enlightenment. An enlightenment experience is pure being perception. But you can increase your being perception without having an enlightenment experience. So, you know, enlightenment experience is pretty rare. It might take you a few years to get one. So don't think that, oh, just, you know, until I'm enlightened, then I'm not improving. No, you can work and improve your being perception just by improving your neuroses. You know, every neuroses that you identify and fix in your life, every emotional dysfunction that you remove means that your deficiencies are reduced, means that they have less of a distortive effect on your perception of reality. Have you ever, this is an interesting example, have you ever interacted with a human being who was like a total victim? Like very pessimistic, very negative. Everything you tell them, they just tell you, no, that's not going to work. It's not going to work for me. I can't do that. No, don't do that. That's going to lead to failure. You ever try talking to these kinds of people? Maybe you have some of these in your family. Hell, maybe you are one of those types of people yourself. And you're kind of struggling with that, right? What do you tell these people? Because you can see, you can clearly see that this person is stuck in deficiency cognition. Everything they look at is tainted by their own, you know, dysfunctional filters and their own need for love. Like, you ever had a needy girlfriend or boyfriend? And at first it's kind of cute, but then it gets real old real fast when they get real needy with you and they start demanding love from you and they want compliments from you and everything you tell them just isn't good enough. All the love you give them, they can't really take it because, you know, their whole perception of reality, including the relationship you have with them and their perception of love, is all being perceived through deficiency cognition. And the more you try to change them or to help them, the worse it gets, because even your attempts to change them, they, because their deficiency is so great, they perceive as you actually not loving them or, you know, trying to change them in some egotistical or narcissistic manner or you threatening them. They take your attempts to change them or to help them or to give them like a self-help book or you tell them, hey, come watch one of these videos, and they get threatened by that. They get offended by that or they start to attack you for that. They start to tell you, no, why are you listening to this new age hippie nonsense? You're listening to this stupid, bald Leo telling you all this bullshit, you know, filling your mind with crap. Next thing you know, you're going to become some fucking yogi in a cave somewhere, and it's going to be all his fault. Right? You experience that? Very common. So yeah, you know, some people are really far gone with it, but it's a spectrum. So it's not like you're either black or white, you know, you're either perfect or you're neurotically dysfunctional. Most people are somewhere in between. It varies quite a bit, but the average person is quite a bit dysfunctional and deficient in their perception. So that's that point. Also, let me talk briefly about the connection of this to rationalism. So I have an episode that I recently released called Why Rationality is Wrong. It's basically a critique of rationality. And this episode here really should dovetail with that one. You can consider this one kind of like a sequel to that one. Because everything I talked about there, the limits of rationality and the limits of thinking and the distinction between awareness and thought, well, that's what I'm talking about here now, just from different perspectives, giving you more detail on it. This is where rationalism really fails. Rationalism as a system fails to see its own systemic flaw, which is its own blindsidedness to the fact that thoughts warp and distort perception. What the rationalist tells himself, or what his mind tells him rather, is that the mind says, hey, look, we're thinking, and our thinking is so good that we got it all down. But actually, what's happening is that that thinking, as David Bohm was saying, that thinking is influencing the rationalist's perceptions and tainting it to the point where what the rationalist is perceiving is actually a construction of his own rationalism. And in this way, he tricks and deceives himself into seeing things that are not actually out there, but that are actually just figments of his imagination. And one of the greatest figments of the rationalist's imagination is that rationalism is the end-all, be-all system of analyzing and arriving at truth, when in fact it's not. Not at all. So that's my point about rationalism. Let me wrap up now. I hope you can see how powerful this is. I'm frankly at a loss of words to convey to you how, I don't know what I have to do to have to jump up and down to convey to you how deeply significant this is for you to make a study of this. You cannot self-actualize without changing your cognition. You can't be self-actualized and looking at the world from deficiency cognition, which is basically another way of saying that you cannot self-actualize while maintaining your ego, which is another way of saying that you cannot self-actualize without enlightenment, ultimately. How can you? I mean, you could improve your life without enlightenment. Sure, you can improve your life. You can earn more money and you can have better relationships and stuff. So you can do improvement, but you're not really going to get to like the part of life that's really juicy and satisfying, the self-actualizing part. So you have to make a choice, and the choice for you is the following. Are you going to stay faithful to your self-agenda or to reality? What's more important to you, your self-agenda or reality? And these two things are at odds, because your self-agenda distorts reality. So if your full loyalty goes to self-agenda, then reality will be distorted. Okay, that's guaranteed. It's kind of like a law of psychological physics, you might say. And just the flip side of that, if you are totally loyal to reality, then reality will distort your self-agenda. Which are you less comfortable with? The distortion of reality or the distortion of your self-agenda? Do you realize that self-agenda is the distortion of reality? That's what self-agenda is. You have to distort reality to create a partition within an unpartitioned reality for there to be space for an ego. Because there's no actual ego. The ego is a fiction. That's where all this is ultimately rooted in, is that the ego is a fiction. Your self-agenda is a total fiction. To maintain it, you have to distort reality. Because if you didn't distort reality, you would see that it's a fiction, and that it couldn't exist. And on the other hand, if you're going to pay all your allegiance to reality, then you can't do that and also maintain your current self-agenda. Because your self-agenda is a distortion of reality. So if you're going to straighten out reality and perceive it as it actually is, eventually, I mean, you can do that for a while and still have your self-agenda, but eventually, if you get real serious about it, what will happen is that you try to straighten out reality completely, the self-agenda is going to have to completely crumble. So, in a sense, can you handle the truth? Do you want the truth? Or is what you want your self-agenda? But then recognize that if what you want is your self-agenda, then you shouldn't be too surprised when you have problems in your life because of the inaccurate perceptions of reality that you have. Do you see what the problem is with an inaccurate perception of reality? It's the same problem that a child has who believes in monsters that live under her bed. Right? If she doesn't care about reality in that situation, and she's just adamant that what she cares about is her self-agenda, which is, you know, her safety and her survival, then what she will do is she will insist that there's a monster under her bed, and she will insist on taking all sorts of measures to prevent the monster from attacking her, and she will waste a lot of her energy and a lot of her life defending herself against monsters that, to an outside observer, we would just say, hey, I mean, wouldn't it be easier to just, like, straighten out your perception of reality? Like, look under the bed and see that there are no monsters. And then you don't have to go through all these, you know, backflips and all these mental gymnastics to protect yourself from things that don't exist. You know, but the problem is that if you're so unconscious that all you care about is your self-agenda, then I can't help you. And nobody can help you. And the really sad part is that you can't even help yourself because you've basically committed to a life of inaccurate perception of reality. And you better believe that will deeply affect many, many, many facets of your life. And of course, the most important thing to you, which is the quality of your life. The emotional quality of your life, which is all you really care about, is the emotional quality and fulfillment of your life. That is the cost of your self-agenda, very paradoxically. Because the self-agenda tells itself that the reason that it needs to protect itself is because it needs to defend and protect and ensure its own emotional well-being in the future. But as with many things in life, you know, too much of a good thing becomes a bad thing. And that's the case with you. So make your choice. What's it going to be? All right, this is Leo. I'm signing off. Please click the like button for me. Post your comments down below. I do read most of them. Share this episode with a friend. And lastly, come check out actualize.org right here. It's my website. I have some good resources for you there. I have a newsletter that keeps you on track with new material that I release. And I'm also going to be releasing more exclusive content just for my newsletter subscribers as bonuses. So that's coming in the future. Make sure you sign up and stay tuned for that. The topics I talk about going forward are going to get deeper and deeper and deeper. And what I want from you is I want you taking action on these things that I tell you, because quite frankly, what's going to happen is I'm going to lose a lot of you. A lot of you come in here, you listen to my ideas and you're like, oh, these are cool. I like these. And, you know, they're helpful. But then what happens is that you listen to more and more and more. And then you can get to the point where it's like, Leo's just going off the deep end. You know, he's going to some crazy land with this personal development stuff. You know, this enlightenment stuff is just getting ridiculous and this and that. It's because you're not actually taking action on the things I tell you. Take fucking action. Do the little exercises I tell you. Your life will transform in ways you can't even imagine yet. And then, as a bonus, you'll be able to listen to me in the future to more and more advanced stuff. And then that's when self-actualization work really gets exciting, is when you kind of get past the newbie stuff and then you start to listen to all the really advanced stuff and you start to practice it and apply it. It gets so exciting because you can see it working and you can see the potential of it, you know, where it's going to take you 10, 20 years from now, and it can take you to some extraordinary places. And you start to see that picture. You really start to like feel it in your bones that it's possible for you to transform your whole life. That's kind of where I'm at in my life. And man, it's like it just gets better and better. Every month, it just gets better and better. And at the same time, it's still painful for me. You know, every month is still painful and painful. Sometimes I have really painful months because this work is brutal. This work of clearing your ego smog, it's not easy business. It's hard business. Which is exactly why you need these kinds of resources. So I'm here to help you to provide the resources that will take you all the way to what you can fully be. What you can fully be is extraordinary. It's extraordinary. But it takes commitment from you to want that, to work towards that, to make sacrifices, especially sacrifices of your self-agenda. Because you're wise enough to see the greater good that will ultimately come to you. You, put that in quotes. But if you do have that wisdom, man, you're so lucky. Don't squander it. Act on it. Embody it. Live it. Live the things I tell you. Live the things that resonate with you and that make sense to you, that you intuit are true and valuable in the ultimate existential sense. Do that, and your life will become something that you will have tears over, tears of joy and beauty. Anyways, sign up, stay tuned, and I'll see you soon with more.